You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
What up, what up? Good evening.
Hey. Good evening.
Hope everyone is well and safe and healthy, of course. We're still fighting the COVID, but we're also, fighting another virus. Racism. That's what I'll call it. Racism. Being black. So we're kind of continuing this conversation. Today we have two new guests. Gary Jones, designer and tailor extraordinaire of Jones Select, and Larry Cush. He is in the automotive industry. Chrissy Mack.
Welcome to the show. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thank you. Thank you. Good to be here.
Appreciate it. Absolutely. Definitely a pleasure. A pleasure. Yeah. So I am Chrissy Mack, everybody.
And I'm Berkeley. And we are.
Closet conversation.
See, I didn't say it this time. It's always a delay, so we worked it out this time. It worked. I just moved my mouth. Tell us a little bit about yourself before we get into the topic. I guess we can start with Gary.
Yeah, so Gary Jones, owner of Jones Select Custom Clothing. I've been in the tailoring industry for about 15 years. I'm based in Columbus, Ohio. My target demographic that I work with are C-suite execs, athletes, business professionals. And what I do is really personal branding for wardrobe. And so I've been doing that for some time, and I've enjoyed it. But I've always kept my hand in the community, so I help build a program here at the Urban League around clothing as well. Suiting men that don't, they're trying to get jobs or coming out of jail, things of that nature as well. So my hand has always been in the business industry, but as well as the community.
Okay. And where are you located?
Columbus, Ohio.
Cool.
Columbus. So are you in Ohio State?
Of course. Oh, yeah. All day.
Go green, go white.
All right.
It's all good. Larry. Yes, ma'am.
Big Papa.
Yes, ma'am.
Tell us a little bit about yourself.
I'm going to start off with the fact that I am a stone's throw away from probably the most historic football stadium in the country. Go Blue, Big House, for those folks in Columbus. Been all around the world via my father, who was a career Marine. So been a lot of places, seen a lot of things, have a lot of different perspectives, experienced some things myself, some eye-opening things. One of the biggest things I think is the problems we're having right now in our country. I never experienced those problems until I came to this country. The first part of my life I spent overseas because of my father's stations. So spent time in the Deep South, spent time in Asia, now in Michigan. So really been a lot of different places in between those and seen a lot of things. And I think I have maybe a different perspective on things. My goal really is to, we're not going to conquer this disease. We're not going to make the people who already feel this way change. The thing is to make people think, and you want to make their children change, to get the ball rolling with thinking. Thinking and love is going to get us through this.
I like that.
Absolutely. Right. Okay. So, Larry, what is your nationality?
So my mom's Korean and my dad is white Irish. 50-50 down the middle, half Irish, half Korean. I'm actually first generation on both sides of my family. My father's side immigrated from Ireland. My dad, obviously during a different time, was actually born and raised in South Jamaica, Queens. when it was a little different than it is now. So, you know, although, you know, he is white, went through a lot of the same struggles. The Irish people weren't welcomed when they first came to this country either. And, you know, so a lot of different perspectives. He was raised in the South as well after about 14 years in New York. So it was interesting hearing his perspectives as far as him and my grandfather and grandparents being progressive. Because of their values being raised in the North and then moving to the South. So, a lot of different things there, but I've always identified, as Asian, and these last couple of weeks have, you know, there's been a lot of self-reflecting, and I don't know if I identify as Asian because I identify as Asian or is because I was put in that category by other people.
Because, yeah, looking at you, I told you when I met you, I was like, I don't think he's black. He could be mixed. But then something about the eyes, I was like, it's giving me a little Asian feel of the eyes.
Right.
And then his demeanor, you know, was kind of like of a black man. Like,
Right, it is. Yeah.
Yeah, that's why I was totally thrown off. Yeah, so I'm like, you must have a lot of black friends.
Definitely got some brother in him somewhere.
Absolutely. Yeah. Gary, you are African American?
Yes, I identify as a black man for sure.
Okay.
although my grandmother was full Indian. Yeah, she was full Indian on my father's side. Both their parents were both Indians. Like I seen pictures that had dots in their head. I was like, really? And it was very interesting because I've traveled abroad a bunch and have been to India, China, Africa, and some other places as well. And it was super, super interesting when you don't, fit the traditional African American or black man. Because when I was there, which was my first trip of these 10 years ago, when I was at an orphanage, the kids were trying to touch my hair. It was really weird. The person next to me looked kind of African, and they were like, well, what is he? You know? and it's weird because of it. Your skin color, your tone, because we're such a variety that, it's very interesting when you start to visit other places and, just figuring out what diaspora really is, like the African diaspora, how vast it is. I was just in Africa for my 40th this past, because that's the whole conversation about that, going to the actual slave castles and kind of retracing some steps in Ghana. It was an amazing experience. So I definitely have a perspective about race, but through exposure, and not just my American experience of being a black person that grew up in a rural neighborhood. Like I grew up in a city here of Columbus. And so I definitely have an opinion about the things that are going on for sure.
Did we lose Larry? Uh-oh.
We might have. I think he might be coming back.
Okay. Maybe. All right. We'll wait on him.
I'll keep an eye on it for you guys.
Okay, cool. Thank you. With what is going on now, Christy and I in Closet Conversations would definitely like to continue sending out prayers to the family of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery. And I think there was like a newest situation or incident. Like, was that yesterday? I'm not even sure what. I'm like, come on now.
It seems like it's been a few situations for the past, the past few days. So
yeah, it's something else that transpired. And then I think the gentleman lost his life. I don't know what city or state that's in, but I did see that earlier on social media. So Gary, what is your take on this? I mean, we've had protests in the past, peaceful and I guess, violent or some looting or whatever. And all of the imagery that I see a lot of the police provoking the situation, kind of antagonizing, even with protesters, no justice, no peace. One was even talking about, praising God and wanting to come to his house and, you know, meet his family and, you know, breaking bread together and just trying to get like an understanding. And the next thing I know, they're pulling him out of the crowd and arresting him. You know, it's just a lot. I know that you recently did something in Ohio where I thought that was pretty extraordinary and nostalgic, having the black men or protesters, I guess it was more than just black men, dress up in, you know, Sunday's best in a suit. And I commend you on that. So, yeah, we want to hear your views about this.
Yeah, I mean, I think as a whole, obviously I'm not old enough to have a walk with Dr. King or Malcolm, and I've heard the stories. And I think we're living in such a historic time right now. And I think that the police for so long have had their own laws, so to speak, and their own secret code. And I think we all have groups that we identify, but the reason why the police are different is because they can enforce their ideology, you know, through their hands. And so there's nobody policing the police. So things have started to change slowly with cameras, really. You know, I seen something that Will Smith said. It was like, you know, racism hadn't got better. It's now you can just see it. And I think that is the truth. You know, even as a black man in America, I've been pulled over. Definitely been in situations that, you know, the person pulling me over was looking for an issue. Fortunately enough, it's not led me to incarceration, but it has led to embarrassment and feeling a particular way. Because somebody wanted to pull me over for a particular reason or question, you know, pull me out the car or put my life in danger. And so I think that what we have going on now after the pandemic of COVID is that you have people in more of a empathetic mood. I think for me, sitting at home running a business for the last 3 months, I had to think about what was the most important thing to me. And it was my family. It was being healthy. It was the basic things in life. And I think for once, we were all in the same place at the same time, right? For 3.5-4 months dealing with this disease, worried about how life is going to change. And what do you mean I have to stay home, so only go out for essentials? So now we're not desensitized by everything else that is important in our life, which is money, our career, what are we driving? Like, none of that stuff mattered while we're in the house for the last 3 months, right? Like, nobody's really worried about buying a new car. You're worried about not getting sick. And then we have another black man that's being killed, and it's very, you know, it's polarized. Like, you know, this man was literally killed by these cops, and it was over $20. So I think, you know, the Black Lives Movement and the conversation is really about we are looking for equality, you know, and I think most of us that work hard to run businesses, you try to not be categorized as what we would call, quote unquote, typical when it comes to our community. But to be honest, that even that really comes from somebody else's ideology, because the black men that I know and love and even work with are great people, are loving people, are caring people, are great fathers. And I think we just have reached a point where it was just, I mean, I hate to say, it's just the timing of things. And I'll just say that, you know, we had somebody that was unfortunately taken from us, and it has created something terrible and beautiful at the same time. And the reason why I say that is terrible, because we lost a man that over $20. Mm-hmm. But the beauty is that when I went out and protested prior to doing the event that I did, I mean, I seen, you know, people of every color, every race that were saying the same thing. And it's very difficult, because there's an unsaid rule about, you know, what do you do when you walk out the house when a cop is behind you? We all know the rules. I have an 11-year-old son that I had a conversation with him about his aggression, you know, 2 or 3 months ago. Like, you can't do that. You're going to middle school next year. Mm-hmm. And the reason why is that people get scared and they feel like they have to restrain you, right? And he's a good kid, but that doesn't matter. Being good, wearing a suit doesn't matter. What matters is that you have a person that has only been trained for so long that has this innate prejudice, because the marketing that you see, the music that you see, like, everything you see from us is aggressive that they allow out, right? But they don't show, you know, the stuff that really goes on in our community, how much love we have, how much loyalty we have, you know? And so I think it's a critical time that we're living in. And like I said, it's a terrible time, but it's a beautiful time. So I feel like we have an opportunity to hopefully make a difference. And so that's why, you know, I was a part of the event. on Sunday, which was really just black men of, you know, all walks of life from a perspective of their career path. But we really wanted to make a statement to show that we contribute to the society in so many different ways. There were lawyers, engineers, and vice presidents and C-suite guys and business owners and politicians. All of those people came to wear the clothes that they wear to work every day. We just made it a point to come together and show some unity and to try to make a statement. And I think that it's important that those things get out to the public as well. You know, my son is Trayvon, right? And we know I can wear a hoodie in the morning to go work out, and then I might get in the suit when I actually go to work. And it amazed me when I traveled the country. You know, when I was in Asia, I went to China for a minute. I was dealing with a client who was playing overseas, and I'm always in a suit typically. And I walked in, you know, walked down, and the guys treated me a particular way. And honestly, it was the most racist place I've ever been in my life. But they treated me different when they felt like I had money, right? And then it was just you know, the ni hao. You know, they wanted to say thank you. They wanted to talk to me because they wanted something that I had. But they had this disdain for me, you know. And I think that's something we feel on a regular. I mean, and I think even sometimes our black women feel a particular way because we don't give each other enough credit. So I'm not going to go on and on, but I could talk about this forever. But I'll sum it up to say that I feel like we have a special opportunity to, one, come together as black people, but also one race. And I think that we have to come together and set our differences aside among the black community and not be separate and not say seven different things. Right now we're saying equality. You know, whether I'm in a suit or whether I'm in a hoodie, we're saying we want equal rights, we want equal opportunities. And that's, to me, that is really what my perspective is, that we just have to all get on the same page and really just, you know, hit the gas in this with this opportunity.
Yeah.
Wow. Agreed. Yeah.
Was there police presence at your protest or the one that you did?
Yeah. So the first time I went out, it was a little different. I mean, the National Guard was here, and I don't know if you guys know about the like how it is in Ohio, but it is it's extreme when it comes to, you know, black and white and that distinction. And so the first time I went out, there was definitely police with armor out. I mean, the National Guard was out. But when we did the event on Sunday, no police had on armor. It was very few police that were out. Okay. And there were just like, you know, pastors and professional people, and everybody walked around and cameras were there. But I feel like there are, you know, there are protesters, and then there are people that are hanging out late, and they're, you know, there to really be more provocative, you know, people that are trying to provoke things. And so, I mean, the whole downtown is boarded up, and our city is exploding with growth. Like there is, you know, downtown living, which didn't exist. People kind of moved to the suburbs or lived in kind of the neighborhood. And now, you know, there's probably 20 new condos and 20 new, you know, apartment living down there. The city is busting at the seams. And so everything downtown right now is boarded up from glass being broke and situations, you know, jumping off. But on Sunday, it was a different, you know, I think that they started to see that if you meet us with aggression, then that aggression is probably going to be met back with the same aggression. And then it's going to continue to polarize the problem to say, listen, if you come out here, we have our children out here. Like one situation that I thought was amazing, I have a lot of respect, and I won't mention his name, but there's a kid of ours that went to a city school. And he decided to go to Harvard. He had a full basketball scholarship to any school he wanted to go to. He just graduated. And he got hurt. And he still had, like, I think 2 years left of playing eligibility. Graduated from Harvard. Now he's going to Ohio State to play basketball. NBA prospect. He's down there protesting. He gets arrested. He's not violent, but he gets arrested. And it was to prove a point. And he had a message. And this kid is young, but wise beyond his years, is that, you know, he said he was proud of, you know, getting his degree from Harvard, but he's also proud that he would stand up for what he believes in. And the country that we live in today, we should have the ability to speak, because that's what we say this is, the land of the free, for us to articulate ourselves and our beliefs, right? And unfortunately, it just does, it's not the same for it. I mean, it sounds good, but unfortunately, you know, when you see a person like that get engaged, you know, and people probably didn't, even if they knew who it was or not, like, that's the point. It doesn't matter. This kid chose to go to Harvard, an Ivy League school. And it's just to say that he's one of, you know, a person that is doing extremely well for himself. And so if that happens to him, it can happen to my son, it can happen to me, and it can happen to anybody that looks like me. So I think that we have to continue to have that conversation to talk about things have to change. And we have to continue to pressure and push the politicians and make sure that we are conveying the message that it's not fair. And it's hard because as a Black business owner, I don't ever want to, it's hard for me to ask for anything. You know, I've been taught my whole life to hold my feelings down and to not ask for anything, just to work hard and shut my mouth and keep my head down. But the truth is that most of our counterparts have help. They have a network that puts them in a position. They have people that help them. And that is the privilege. The Black experience that I have is that I can be the best in my city, which I am by far. Probably, and I'll say top 10 in the country at what I do. I'm elite. And I'm not saying it just to say it. My portfolio will speak for itself. But I don't even boast or talk about half the things that I do because of what I learned in my age group. I'm 40. So we just learn how to work. Like, that's what it is. The younger generation, they polarize a little bit differently. But if I was a different person, there's a person from my city, and I won't say their name, but they all over the country, 6 months of starting a business with every Black athlete in the country. Of course, his business is going to grow. And again, that's the privilege. For me, I got to work 10 times harder. I can't mess up. And then ask me if I had the capital to start. No. So, so my resources are limited. I have to be extremely gifted. You know what I mean? I have to be extremely talented to balance a checkbook, to rob Peter to pay Paul, to establish myself in the industry, to even grow or even be in that space. Is going to cost me everything. And I think that people don't realize it because we don't like to talk about it. We just understand it as the rule. And we know, hey, you have one mess up, you're not getting in this door no more. Nobody can give you a chance. So, my experience, obviously, like I said, I could go on and on about what that looks like. I think hopefully we can come together as one race, but we have to come together in these conversations to try to find some commonalities of what can we do day by day to change people's minds, because people have perspective of what a Black man is, what we do, who we are, how we operate. And to be honest, most people never know because we don't share.
Hey, so I'm back on. Great point there. I just came back from Tennessee picking up my son, and I had several interesting conversations with people. I think the biggest problem in this country is the media. I realized while I was down, man, I was in a Waffle House, and people were talking about white privilege, and they didn't understand it because they didn't have shit, and they're in a trailer, and da 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 da. And, you know, I decided on the way down there, I figured with everything going on, the way I look, that there could be some run-ins here or there. And I decided to make a concerted effort to make those, whatever situations those were, to be positive, not abrasive, not loud. So I felt like this could be the first experience that a lot of these people had with someone who was different, someone who looked different, someone who acted different. And, you know, I had to make a concerted effort, you know, to make sure that these experiences were positive. And in talking to these people, I realized that, so I'm in this little podunk part of Tennessee where they don't really see Black people unless it's at the gas station coming through on a road trip or something like that. Their perception of Black people is what they see on the news and what they see on TV and movies. Absolutely. And, you know, I looked at this lady in her eye and I told her, you know, I know there's a problem in this country because on the way down here, I realized that my son is, you know, he's 3/4 white and 1/4 Korean. And I'm so glad that he's got the blonde hair and blue eyes that my dad does. So he wouldn't have to go through what I went through. And I can't imagine what I went through probably pales in comparison to what Black people go through. Mm-hmm. But for him not to go through the little bullshit I had to go through, that's when I knew something was wrong. When the thought crossed my mind, I was disgusted with myself. the thought crossed my mind that I was glad my son didn't look like me.
Wow.
And that lady looked at me in my eye, and that's when I knew that love and thinking is going to get people out of this. And I told her, I was like, I'm not going to change your mind about anything you said today or the way you felt when you woke up this morning. But if you think about me in 3 days, if you think about me next week, if you think about this conversation, then that's where it starts. That's where we need to be.
Yep.
And I had, you know, one guy pipe up and tell me, you know, well, it sounds like you're more white boy than one of them and this, that, and the other. And I'm like, you know what? When I was in the South and it was the white boys that were calling me a chink and labeled me an Asian, it was the black kids that fought with me.
Of course.
And so it was their, so it was their culture that I adapted. So who am I to borrow bits and pieces of your culture and to align myself with you guys and not stand up now? And not stand up for the people that loved me and cared about me when nobody else did. And that's what it's about. And, you know, what we're doing here in Ann Arbor, in this area, there's a lot of peaceful protests. My boy out here, Ethan Kenter, you guys can check him out on Instagram, all that. I'll send Berkeley's the link. He's organizing huge protests out here. We're marching through. So our whole thing is trying to reach new audiences. Everyone downtown areas have seen us. We've blocked 94. We've blocked 23 in peaceful protests. So he came up with this idea. Let's make it uncomfortable for white people and let's march through their neighborhoods and let's ask them for help for change.
Right.
And people came out and supported us. And this is the new thing, is this is all these Antifa people, all these instigators, you know, that you're talking about in Columbus and doing all this kind of stuff. They know the power of the media in this country. Absolutely. And they want to incite violence so they can go to these little podunk towns in Tennessee and say, see, this is how black people are.
Exactly.
And it's not. I did 6 years in Detroit. I lived at Woodward and Seward. You know what I mean? The most beautiful thing I've seen in a community is the black community. You know, I didn't have anything. They didn't have anything. They took me in. The way the neighbors, the way the community treats each other and looks out for each other is insane. I live in an apartment complex in Ann Arbor. I don't know my fucking next door neighbor. You know what I mean? I don't know his name.
Are they white?
He's Indian. His girl's white. You know?
Oh, okay.
They don't know my name. I don't know. There's two people in the neighborhood I know. Both guys are black. And it's both dudes that I walked by, and I was wearing my Wu-Tang shirt. He was wearing his Biggie shirt, you know, and we just started rapping.
So on,
you know,
so on day-to-day, how does that make you feel? Like, does that make you feel uncomfortable?
Day-to-day, it makes me feel uncomfortable, so I'm starting to make people feel uncomfortable. Mm. So I'm walking around with my Nike USA team shirt a lot. Because I want people to ask me, I want people of color to ask me, and I want white people to ask me, like, you know, what tip are you on? Because what I'm seeing now is I'm seeing the current administration, and I'm seeing the cronies that follow him. Since we've defeated the Confederate flag, they're trying to turn our flag into their new hate flag. They're using it as a divisive tool. And I see people of color lashing out against the flag, and I get it, because it's a symbol. It's become a symbol of everything that's wrong. Everything that Trump has is decked out with American flags to the T. Anyone who supports Trump, I mean, it's to the point where you drive down the street and you see a big American flag on someone's front porch and you're like, yeah, Trump. You know what I mean? So we can't let things like this, we can't let stupid, bigoted people change what this country is. That's our flag. The biggest letters in the Constitution say we the people. And right now we are taking back our country. We have to remember that we have to do it the right way. There's a right way to do it and there's a wrong way to do it. The wrong way to do it is to let others incite these things. We need to become more organized. You know, there needs to be a nationwide organized protest. Like here in Ann Arbor, our mission right now, the woman who was beaten by police in Ann Arbor. I don't know if you guys heard about that. They went to the wrong house.
Was that the outside situation?
Yeah, where the woman was punched in the face. So that's part of our marches. We started that sheriff station, the black sheriff, who contends that his white officers did nothing wrong. Our contention is that to treat anyone like that of any color, who was clearly not resisting arrest and wanted an explanation of what was going on, is wrong. He has yet to admit that his officers were wrong and has put snipers on top of his building every time we've come for a peaceful protest.
Really?
Wow.
So our goal currently is to have her charges overturned and her charges dropped, along with the Black Lives Matter, along with the end of police brutality, and an overlaying message of love and peace to bring everyone together. Because what I'm seeing is I'm seeing black, brown, all shades of people, young, old, children, everyone's out here and everyone believes. I was on my way to a state park and drove through Dexter. And Dexter is, I would say, 99.99% white. And there were four people in the city square holding big signs in their protests. And just to see, I know it's not a huge amount of people, but just to see that thought process and people willing in a community like that, a small community, a small farm community like that, to put themselves out there like that, to stand with us is very encouraging to me.
Well, that's good. That's good. I mean, I used to go to Ann Arbor to play volleyball, you know, back in the early 2000s, you know, when I was, playing, you know, AAU and organized sports and things like that. And I kind of like felt like every time I would go out there, I would feel like a lot of racial tension. So I always kind of like tried to steer away from going out there in Ann Arbor. Is it still like that there?
So one of the things that drew me to Ann Arbor was, so with my ethnic background and moving around all over the place, like I never really felt like anywhere was home. But my first interactions in Ann Arbor were when everyone was here from school. So when everyone's here from school, it's a very diverse community. It's a very accepting community. You have a large Asian community, you know, when school's here is when you have the majority of the Black and Latino community here. In the summer times, it's a much different place than it is. The thing that I really have found perplexing in Ann Arbor, I expected there to be more of a response in Ann Arbor with the way the people vote here, with the way the politics are here. And with the original Black Lives Matter movement, you know, when it first started, there was a lot of support here. I'm actually very disappointed in some of the responses from people in the community, especially of the bigger, smaller businesses here that are predominant. The lack of their leadership standing up, showing a force, marching with us. I think a lot of people are scared because it's a very polarizing issue. Jordan took a lot of heat back in the day when they wanted him to take political sides because he says Republicans buy shoes too. So I think, you know, Ann Arbor is one of those areas. It's a very liberal part of town stuck in the middle of a very conservative area. And a lot of the conservative dollars drive what goes on here.
Yeah, I mean, I get that from a standpoint of a business owner. It's hard to, you have to kind of have a core value system as why you make a decision. Like I had to make a decision if I was going to continue to, I don't post a lot, but am I going to post about the next suit, which I'm not really even doing right now from COVID and all this other stuff. Or am I going to take a stance to help to make this place, like to share my platform to help my son and our country to be in a better place? And I agree with what you said, that I think the world can change with one conversation at a time. And we all have somewhere that we can push a message, and hopefully it has positivity behind it, that we can share our view, and people that respect us will hear that and understand our heart and our spirit. I think the hardest thing around all of this is really just a place of acknowledgement. You know, as a Black man, in any context of a spiritual context, it's like you have to acknowledge if you're going through, you're an addict, you got to acknowledge there's a problem. And I think for the first time, people are seeing that, you know what, that man was killed. Like, yes, him and several others. And how many people are in jail that shouldn't be in jail? And like, this thing is so compact that if we were cashing and we weren't the loving people that you have, as you experienced, like, if you, we are loyal. If you pull up on us and we see something about you, we're going to take you in. That's how we get down. And unfortunately, like, it's our gift and our curse, because we could be loyal to something that is not loyal to us. And in this very moment, you know, we have to pull our self-confidence up, and we have to pull our minds to a different place of just trying to get respect in a place that we deserve because we helped build it. So I think there is a contrast of belief when you talk about the flag. And like, I had my grandfather, I remember I was going to go to the Army. You know, my uncle, my grandfather, my uncle served, you know, most of my uncle served. And I'm about to go to the Army. I'm about to get school paid for. And my oldest uncle put me in a chokehold in a mirror. He's 6'5", right? And he like, the only thing you're going to learn in the Army is to kill or be killed. Mm. And he said, I did this so that I had to. He said, they drafted me. Like, you're making the decision to go be a killer. And I was like, you know what? Now that you said it like that, I'm out. Like, I'm cool.
Same thing my father told me. I wanted to follow in my father's footsteps. I wanted to be a soldier. And he went down. I was going to join the COP program. You do a couple summers, and then you come out as an officer after you graduate, go to OCS. And, man, my dad went right down there to the office, tore them papers up. He said, I did this so you don't have to do this, you know. And, you know, the flag – you know, the story behind the flag and how it came about. And so 200 some odd years ago, 250 years ago, there was a problem here. The people that lived here felt like they were oppressed and felt like there was a better opportunity and they could do things better and there was a better way. And they fought for their freedom. And that's what that flag represents. So we fight for that freedom today. Because the same freedoms that your uncles fought for, and this is the thing that always killed me, man, was we had these Black men come back from war that sat next to my dad in the trenches and defended his life like he defended their lives so that we could continue on our lives here. And they had to come back and use a different bathroom than my dad had to do. You know, my grandfather was a professor at Auburn University. And was almost run out of town because he refused to let the housekeeper come in the back door just because she was Black. You know, that stuff doesn't make sense to me. And my dad laughs about it because he says, you know, the funniest thing was, is Black people were forbidden to drive in the neighborhood that they lived in. So white people would have to go pick up their housekeepers and their yard help, who were usually Black, and they wouldn't let them sit in the front of the car. So he said he would sit there and see the same people that would yell at them about letting Black people come in the front door, they'd be chauffeuring them around the neighborhood. And, you know, it shows the idiocracy of the bigotry. And really what it comes down to is, you know, we're animals. We're very sophisticated animals. And we've created all this around us. But like animals, you know, you tend to gravitate to what you know. And the first thing we know is what we see. You know, you don't see lions hanging out with antelope or giraffes hanging out with elephants. You know what I mean? But we're above that level. You know what I mean? We're capable of so much more. So what drives that is fear. And that fear then becomes hate because it's something different. You're good, man. If my whole thing, if you could take white people and put them one at a time, you know, where I was, and to experience what I experienced, this would be love. I mean, I don't think it's a difference in understanding. It's a difference in how we do things. It's a difference in, you know, just basic, you know, anything, everyday thing. So, you know, it's really about education, love, and thinking, you know, showing people.
And experience, you know, I think, too. I think
and experience, I try to use food as a way, you know, to help, you know, it was to help my Black friends experience my culture was through my mom's food. You know, those are positive. You have to have positive experiences to get past fear and hate. You know, you keep positive experiences and that's how you go. Now more than ever, you know, we need to keep an open mind. And I think, you know, I think the time has come. I think, you know, to a lot of credit to Black people and their cultures, you guys have been patient enough. If some of these things that have happened to Black people would happen to my son, I'd have burnt the city down. Sure. You know, there would have been no way to have him call out for me like that. There'd have been no stopping me. And to come out and now the videos I see of protesters helping protect businesses from the instigators and the inciters, and these are the people that are marching now and the people that are supporting this are the people that are gonna on the forefront of this change. And we can't stop. We live in a city of instant gratification, in a society of instant gratification. And we need the young people, we need the teenagers, we need the young voters, we need those people to stay in this and stay with us, or change isn't gonna happen.
I agree. Well, we are thankful for you all coming on. That was a fast, 45 minutes-ish.
Sorry for hogging it up if I hogged it up.
No, you're good. I mean, you both you know, had some awesome points, and you know, you are making a difference in our community. And
which we really appreciate that.
Yeah.
We really appreciate both of you guys, you know, in the forefront, you know, trying to, you know, just create change. Yeah.
Coordinate. Because I feel that I could do more. Do I want to go out and protest? Absolutely. But, you know, I guess it's the scary in me. Like, you know, I don't know.
I'll make a deal with you. Come march with me in Ann Arbor. You
is come march with us.
No, we usually start around 1.
Okay. That's good. It's still daytime though. Because I mean the looters come out at night and the more aggressive.
Ain't no looting here. We actually have so part of the organization that we have here and the organizing that we're doing is we're policing ourselves. We have a small what we call in-house security. To make sure that no one gets out of line on our end.
Okay.
And then to get in between anyone who decides to try to interrupt our peaceful protest.
Okay.
So my deal to you is if you want to come out to Ann Arbor and you want to march with us, you march right next to me with the security folks.
Sweet.
And we'll do some cool shit like shut the highway down and make the other day we made the state police turn their cars around and unblock the highway.
Really?
So, yep.
They were, marching down Jefferson. I saw them twice, but marching down Jefferson, 2 days ago, and, like, literally 100 steps, you know, hands up, don't shoot. They just all laid out in the middle of the street like this.
Two days ago, you couldn't go on 23 because of that.
Man, I need to do that. But before we close, I was just thinking, like, in my head, I was writing down, like, a plan of action. Of course, voting is very important. I would say bringing our communities together, in which both of you all are doing. Would you agree with stepping in when you see injustice or police brutality? A lot of people are recording it and, you know, trying to, you know, clear up situations when they see somebody innocent or, you know, excessive force or whatever that may be happening. So not being quiet, speaking up, recording it, talking to the police, I guess, kind of like mediation. And then holding police accountable, not only police, being, you know, in the Black community, I think we need to hold each other accountable, because, like, we can't be mad if another race kills us and majority of our killing is within our community. So loving ourselves, I guess. You know what I'm saying? But again, holding police accountable, people in our community accountable, and stop killing one another.
Yeah, and I would say use your platform. You know, everybody's not going to land the street. Everybody doesn't. You know, the youngest people are going to be able to do that. Some of us have to work jobs and run businesses. And so I've given to people that to bail them out. You know, there's some funds to kind of help people if they could go through that. And I say use your platform. And, you know, for me and my, you know, few thousand people that I have on whatever platform, I make it a point to share my belief. Even if it's unpopular and I lose a couple customers, I'd rather lose some customers and share my ideas so they understand that I'm passionate about it.
Right.
But everybody's not going to do the same thing. And I think we all have to protest in our own way.
That's big.
We're not going to all agree, you know, because we're different. And what I think right now, we have an opportunity to keep our foot on the gas because we have people that don't look like us, you know, just like this conversation that are helping us. Because as long as it's a few, you know, Black people that are doing it, it's only going to get so far. But now the world is starting to recognize that there is disproportionately, you know, we are being affected by this. And it's not just Black people killing Black people. Like, they don't even call it white on white crime. But there's so much other crime that's not reported or even marketed that way. So to sum up that is to say we have to take action with our influence. To me, that's the fastest way to give impact. I built my own audience based on what I do, and I have influence because they follow me for a reason. So I would say use your platform, talk to your policy, people that are writing policy, the people that do lobbying, you know, start those conversations, because what we don't know hurts us. So everybody's not going to be as extreme. It doesn't make you less as important. We're all important in the fight. I think we just got to be on one accord and keep pushing.
Definitely.
Can I just want to say one thing, man, if I could say anything. First, big props to you, man, because a lot of people will say, but not a lot of people will do. So it takes a lot more to stand up for what you believe in and take the hit for doing so. That's very respectable. I applaud you for that. One thing, if I could, you know, and it might not be my place too. One thing I've come to realize in the last couple of weeks is I don't give a fuck if people don't think it's my place anymore. You know, so if there's one thing that I can say, you know, to Black people, like, you're worth so much more than some people want you to believe. And if you need evidence of that, look how much of your culture people, I don't want to say ride, but look at what they adopt, the music, the style, the hair, everything. If y'all weren't beautiful and if y'all weren't, you know, something, then it wouldn't be the way it is. Exactly. So, you know, it starts there in, you know, believing that it's something worth fighting for. And the biggest thing to add to your list, I think, is there needs to be some concerted effort to get our own media platform out there, to get our own stories out there, and not the recycled CNN, Fox News, not what mainstream wants us to hear, and not what the media is used to control people. So knowledge is power. I just found out today that felons can vote if they go through the proper procedures, you know, during their probation and while they're on papers. So, you know, think about how many more votes we can get out, you know, that way. So little things like that are going to propel us and help us move forward with this movement. And people like you guys to keep this message going. I appreciate y'all as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. Yeah, definitely knowledge is power.
Absolutely.
Sure.
You gonna close it up, Chris?
Yep. So I would like to thank our special guest, Larry, and also, you know, Gary. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for your messages. Thank you for your positivity. And, you know, the fact that you guys have, you know, different platforms, but it's all for the same cause, you know, for equal equality of us all Americans. And it's just something hopefully we can, you know, learn from your both of your messages today. And, you know, thank you so much for being on our podcast. You guys can, you know, for all of our listeners out there, you know, follow us on Closet with the K, Conversation with the K and the Z at the end. We're on Facebook. We're on Instagram. And, you know, hey, once again, you know, my name is Chris Mack.
And I'm Berkeley.
And we are
Closet Conversation.
Woo! Thank you so much for everybody for listening. See you next time.
Thanks for listening. God bless. Good night. Thank you, gentlemen.
God bless you guys. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Matt. Thanks, Podcast Detroit.